The UN agency, the International Fund for Agricultural Development, or IFAD, has just held its annual meeting, which focused on how to support young rural people who will play a vital role in feeding tomorrow's world. The president of IFAD, Kanayo Wanze, spoke to us in an exclusive interview afterwards about a range of global issues, such as the current unrest sweeping the Mideast and North Africa region, how to persuade young people to remain in rural areas, rising food prices, and the moral imperative to end the scandal of so many millions of people going hungry, whilst 40% of the food in the rich world goes to waste. I began by asking Wanze what new insights emerged on the role of the young rural people at their annual meeting.
For some time now, I have been asking the question, who is going to feed the world in 2030, 2050, when world population will be at 9 billion? That means we'll have another 3 billion people on our planet. And I've been asking myself, what parts of the world do we have the highest potential of increasing food production? The indications from FAO data show that world food production must increase by 70% to be able to feed a population of 9 billion. And this has to come mostly from Africa and South Asia, whose potential for increasing production is very high, but whose actual production and productivity levels are very low today. And you could turn that around, that the challenges of food production, food security in those parts of the world offer tremendous opportunities. Now, when you look at those who are producing food today, they are not the youth. And the youth make up about 20% of the population. And in rural areas, they make up some places up to 60%. Those are the people, the generation that is going to feed the world 15, 20, 30 years from today. And if they are not given the opportunity to get into agriculture as an attractive business, as a profession, then we'll have serious problems.
And how can you persuade them to get into agriculture? Because, as you know, we're seeing so often migration of the youth to the cities where they see, well, they think they see better opportunities. How can you do it in concrete terms, persuade them that it's worthwhile making a future in agriculture?
Agriculture is the engine for economic growth. That is a given fact. Agriculture provides employment for rural populations. But you're right, the rural population do not want to stay in rural areas, not because of agriculture per se, but because the rural space lacks modern amenities, transportation, communication, schools, and what have you. So what does this mean? It means to make agriculture attractive for rural youth, you must make the rural space attractive as places where the youth want to live, where they want to go back to. And this is basically why it's important for us to transform the mindset, to change the mindset, to see agriculture as a profession, as an activity that generates income. And furthermore, to redefine the concept of agriculture beyond the growing of the food itself. Because when you look at the typical farmer in South Asia, Africa and other parts of the developing world, the average farmer is the woman with the hoe and perhaps a baby on her back. It is not attractive. But when you look at agriculture as the beginning of the process of producing food, so youth can go into agriculture or into food production, not necessarily just growing the food, but also value addition through processing, marketing, packaging, marketing, and consumer. Cities are getting overcrowded. They get frustrated. Yes, you're right. They want to move into the cities. But it is an illusion to think that by moving to urban cities, they're going to have employment. They do not have employment. When we had the food riots in 2007, 2008, where did the riots occur? In the urban areas, in the big cities, not in the rural areas. What is happening in the Middle East today? Who are the drivers of change? The youth in the big cities who are frustrated, unemployment, no jobs, no social protection. We have the opportunity today to transform the rural space, and it calls for governments at the highest level of political leadership to invest in rural development.
Now, you talked there about galvanizing governments, but we've seen, haven't we, that many governments in developing nations have actually decreased quite sharply their spending on agriculture. Is this true? What kind of figures are we talking about, and how can we persuade them that this is not the way to go about it?
Yes, that is right. Three years ago, the proportion of budgets that governments were dedicating to agriculture was very low. Now it's gone up to about 5.56% globally in terms of investment in agriculture. We hope, we would like for it to get back to about 15-18%. It was close to 30% in the 1980s, and mostly in the developing world, it dropped. But fortunately, governments are beginning to listen to the call to increase investment in agriculture. You are familiar with the Maputo Declaration of 2003, where the African governments dedicated themselves to increasing their agricultural budgets by up to 10% of the annual budgets. And we are glad that about 10 countries today have been able to meet that level: Tanzania, Malawi, Ghana, Niger, and a few others.
And are you already seeing the benefits of that policy change in those countries? I talked to a minister from Malawi who said that, in fact, hunger has decreased markedly since the government decided to focus more or invest more in agriculture.
That is correct. Malawi is a success story, but also we see similar stories emerging from Tanzania and from Ghana. So governments are beginning to listen. Some governments have actually not gotten to the 10% mark, but they have made significant improvement to about 6-7% of their budgets to agriculture. So the change is beginning to occur.
Now, agriculture is all about growing food, and food prices have risen sharply, very sharply, over the past year, even to some record levels for some commodities. But we've heard much less about it in the mainstream media compared to during the 2007-2008 food price rises. Why has it not been talked about much this time? Why is it not getting the publicity?
Well, I think the levels that we're talking about actually have not surpassed. Is the index, the food price index, yes, is high, but in terms of actual prices of staples, at least in Africa, have not exceeded the levels of 2007. And because in Eastern Africa, where maize or corn is the staple food, they have experienced bumper harvests. In West Africa, where we're looking at things like cassava and non-grain crops, these oftentimes are not affected by international prices. The sad part of the story, actually, is that although international prices, if the impact of increase in commodities internationally only impacts much later in rural areas. And you will expect that poor farmers will be able to profit from the increase. Unfortunately, it doesn't happen that way, because farm gate prices do not immediately change. And the middlemen or middlewomen in these communities are the ones that benefit from hikes in food prices.
In 2009, Pope Benedict met and addressed IFAD's Governing Council for its 30th anniversary celebrations and praised the important work you do to promote rural development and to reduce rural poverty. How insightful were his words, and how valuable do you see the contribution that is made by church-sponsored NGOs that are working to achieve those same goals that IFAD is working for?
Yeah, we were actually very much inspired by the meeting we had with Pope Benedict, and the fact that he saw he articulated very well the search for food security with the search for spiritual, you know, upliftment, spiritual security in terms of the relationships there. And interestingly enough, IFAD works with a lot of NGOs, because it's in many countries where government infrastructure and institutions are weak, we find working with NGOs oftentimes is much easier than working with communities. A good number of our activities in Latin America, for example, and parts of Africa are in collaboration with NGOs, and we do provide them with grants where there is very close alignment in terms of our own objectives and our mission, which is to enable poorer people to overcome poverty.
the Pope has often talked, and other people as well, of course, of the moral imperative of helping the world's poorest people, particularly when we see often, you know, displays of huge wealth in the West, particularly, shall we say, in the light of the crisis. It's shone the spotlight on that. But how would you like this message to reach a wider audience of people, to make people realize how important this is?
Well, you know, when you think about it, that's every minute or so, one child dies from hunger and from disease and malnutrition. When you think of it and you realize that 40% of produce that leaves the farm does not get to the consumer because it is lost due to poor storage and post-harvest processing. And you compare that, on the other hand, that in the advanced developed world, 40% of what is not consumed is lost as waste. So you have post-harvest losses in the developing world, 40%. You have post-consumer losses because people either have too much to eat and it is wasted.
Or buy too much.
It is actually a moral responsibility. We cannot continue to close our eyes to the fact that 1 billion people today go to bed every day hungry. We cannot close our eyes to the fact that there is a total lack of moral responsibility where we have 3 square meals a day and we have large population of the world that cannot even afford 1 meal in 3 days. But we have to go beyond short-term solutions. And that is why IFAD puts particular emphasis to ensure that our interventions are sustainable. We want to help poor rural people to be able to produce food not only for themselves and for their families, but enough to be able to sell to increase their economic viability. This is the most important aspect in terms of what we do.
And yet we've seen in the wake of the 2008 global economic crisis, millions more people that have joined the ranks of the poor. Do you sometimes feel you're battling against impossible odds? There's such huge needs out there and never enough funding to help everybody.
Today we are facing a more delicate and more difficult situation. Yes, food prices today may not have peaked to what they were in 2007, 2008, but they are pretty close to that. We are today facing a situation where major economies are having very serious fiscal problems. And so pledges are made, they are not fulfilled. My major worry is that what we see that is happening in the North African countries, in the Middle East today, may spread to other parts of the world where the youth become restive and we then have a global crisis in our hands.
In fact, what do you see as the greatest challenge that we will face in the short term? Do you in fact see this risk of, shall we say, a youth-inspired uprising, or are there other challenges also that you see on the horizon?
Well, the youth uprising is one, and I have no way of saying what dimension that is going to take in the future, but it's very worrying because if you see the way it is spreading. The other one, of course, certainly is the financial and economic crisis, which is affecting the large economies. And the third one, of course, which is more overarching, is climate change, because climate change is going to make it even more difficult for us. And we hope the political leaders and the negotiators will be able to achieve a legally binding agreement to ensure that the rising temperatures do not exceed 2 degrees in the next 15 to 20 years. Otherwise, we'll really have serious problems because we're going to have regions of the world where there'll be extreme floods, regions of the world where there'll be extreme droughts, where it will be difficult to produce food. So we're looking at a situation which is certainly not one that one would like to see happen.
I was speaking to Kanayo Wanze, president of the UN agency, IFAD.